Welcome back. This is hour number two of today's edition of Group Jihad Radio. Right here on We the People Radio Network, otherwise known as WCPRN.com. I'm Kevin Derrick. I do the show every weekend, same time, same channel, at 2 to 4 p.m. Central Time, and try to bring you the best guests I can find, the most interesting folks who shine a different light on the world than the kind of stuff you get in the mainstream media. Well, we just were awakening to the dream of existence with Paul Levy, and I guess I can tell you now that I awakened to the nightmare that our national social and political life has become, in part, with the help of my second-hour guest. He is David Ray Griffin. I call him the Dean of 9/11 Studies. I think his contribution to the literature of the 9/11 Truth Movement is without peer. And I awakened to this sorry dream back in late 2003 when I heard that David Ray Griffin was at work on his first book about 9/11, The New Pearl Harbor. And when I heard that David Ray Griffin, the man I had cited several times in my dissertation on a totally different subject, was going to be presenting a book arguing that the World Trade Center collapses were quite inexplicable, given the official story that something very strange was going on at the Pentagon and so on, this started that there was, in short, abundant evidence that seemed to be pointing towards the possibility of an inside job or false flag attack. I was amazed, and I thought, well, I'd better check it out for myself. And I did, and lo and behold, the case was very strong, and when the 9/11 Commission report came out, it became overwhelming. Well, since then, David Ray Griffin has continued to work on this all-important historical case. He has written, I think it's six books now on 9/11, The New Pearl Harbor, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, 9/11 and Christian Faith, Debunking 9/11, Debunking 9/11 Contradictions, and the New Pearl Harbor Revisited. These are books that I believe will have some serious historic significance many generations from now. So it's an honor and a privilege to welcome a man I greatly admire, David Ray Griffin. Thanks for coming on, David.
Well, thank you, Kevin. It's good to be with you. I hope they don't only have historic significance. I hope they do some good in the shorter run, too.
Well, I was thinking in terms of changing history, not just recording.
Ah, yes, okay. Not just people looking back and saying, well, gee, they should have paid some attention to that.
Right. Yeah, no. I'm hoping that you'll be hailed as a prophet in your own country in your own lifetime, and you certainly are by more and more people.
What I expect is that the current people in the media who just completely shun us and or call us names will, if the truth ever comes out, they'll say, well, it's too bad. It's so obvious 9/11 was an inside job, but it's too bad those guys in the 9/11 Truth Movement just weren't very good at presenting the evidence.
Right. Well, I don't think that'll apply to you, David, because your books are models of clarity, of fair, balanced arguments. I mean, you can't present the case any better than you have.
Well, you and I may think that, but I'm just talking about the rationalization that people will use when they, on the one hand, they have to admit that it's so obvious. On the other hand, they have to admit that back then, when it could have made a difference, they didn't trumpet our books. They ignored our books or ridiculed our books. They'll have to have an excuse, and that will, as it quite often has been in the past, well, the messengers were so bad. If there had just been some really intelligent people in the 9/11 Truth Movement, who knew how to write and weren't conspiracy theorists, then we would have all gotten it.
Well, David, if you hadn't come along and written your book, they would have a much better case than they'll ever have trying to use that excuse, given those six books that you've put out, including this brand new one, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, which I haven't read yet. But I take it that over the course of studying this historic event, series of events, your initial impression that there was a strong case for inside job has only been strengthened the longer you study it.
Well, that's right. It got stronger with every book. And with the first book, The New Pearl Harbor, I was calling it a prima facie case. And then I learned from a lawyer later that when that term is used in a criminal trial, the prosecuting attorney presents a prima facie case against the accused, and then it's up to the defense attorney to bat that down. And if the defense attorney does not, then it's considered the prima facie case is proved, and the person is convicted. And that's what I realized then, that we had presented that case. Then the 9/11 Commission, so we were in that sense the prosecutors against the Bush administration. They became the defense counsel for the Bush administration, and of course with Philip Zelikow, essentially a member of the Bush White House, heading up the commission, they were preparing the brief to defend the Bush administration, you know, without admitting that's what they were doing, because they had my book, they had other things, they knew what our case was, and without mentioning us, they were trying to defeat our case, but they didn't do it. You can't, you know, attorney, if you say the prosecution is saying, okay, Smith killed Jones, and here's the evidence, the defense attorney can't just get up and tell another story and say, it was really Wilson who killed Jones, and present some circumstantial evidence and ignore all the evidence against, you know, that you gotta bat down the case against your client, as well as maybe suggesting somebody else did it. And they didn't do that. And that was my next book, of course, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, showing that they simply ignored about 99% of our case and took on only 1%, and they took that on by distorting the evidence that we had presented. And so they're like the defense attorney who just ignored the prima facie case.
Right. And the reason that they gave for ignoring us was by, you know, they would call us names. They would say anybody who would even make this kind of a case is some kind of a bad person.
Yeah, or incompetent. I just heard the other day a fellow who had talked to Philip Sheehan, who, of course, recently wrote the definitive orthodox book on the 9/11 Commission. It's orthodox in the sense that one can say they did all sorts of things wrong, but not say they covered up the fact that 9/11 was an inside job. So Sheehan shows a lot of damning evidence against the commission and against Zelikow in particular, but never mentions all the things that that we would talk about that would show it was a cover-up, not simply a mess, and not simply that he was trying to defend the Bush administration against incompetence and trying to help the Bush administration's case against Iraq as being part of 9/11 and all that. And that Sheehan's reply to this guy was, well, you know, Griffin is really an emeritus professor of religion. So, you know, he's really not competent to deal with these things. And that's a classic ad hominem argument. You don't deal with any of the evidence. You just say, well, why are you going to pay any attention to that? He's not qualified to do this. And ignoring the fact that I'm not saying all these things on my own grounds. I'm saying them mainly on the basis of work that other people have done, which now includes, and this is the, to get to the new book, the how the new book differs from previous ones, is that now there is so much work that has been done by scientists, particularly physicists and chemists, and then also pilots, architects, and engineers, that refute the official story, and mainly I'm a mouthpiece for these scientific studies and for Sheenan to say, well, you don't have to pay attention to him because, you know, he's really not a physicist or an architect or an engineer, is simply a way of avoiding all the issues.
And, of course, it's completely ludicrous. But the reason I took this seriously in the first place is because I know your work in other areas, and you are not purely a hair-splitting kind of theologian. You actually look at empirical reality, many different areas of empirical reality, and make sense of it. And this is what scholars often do in the humanities. You're one of the best people for making sense of empirical questions out there, and it seems that makes it even more odd that they would be slurring you with this particular charge.
Yeah, you know, and it's quite often, you know, the shorthand is that I'm a theologian, or some people say philosopher of religion. And so that's all he's qualified to deal with without even bothering to look at my publication list and see that there are many books that deal with the nature of religion and the relation between religion and science, which means you have to get into questions of the philosophy of science. And then some books that just deal straight with science, like my little book on the reenchantment of science and the edited volume on physics and the ultimate significance of time, dealing with both relativity physics and quantum physics, where I had about a 50-page introduction to those issues in relation to the question of whether time is ultimately real. And so I would certainly put my credentials up against Philip Sheenan's to deal with these issues any day. You know, as Barack Obama says, if John McCain wants to debate these issues, that's a debate I would like to have.
Indeed. And it seems this ad hominem principle is the real key to the way that the 9/11 truth movement has been held back. At every level, we're being hit with these various kinds of insults, often completely ignorant ones, and that gives people an excuse to ignore us. So what's the best strategy for dealing with that?
Well, there doesn't seem to be one, because no matter how many times we point it out, no matter how many times we point out that they use conspiracy theory in a one-sided, loaded way, pejorative way, whenever it's convenient, they just keep doing it. And, you know, it is sort of like John McCain. You can keep pointing out that he's telling lies, and he just tells more lies, and sometimes keeps telling the same lie, and they do the same thing. So there you have it. Because with so much, with the audience they're trying to reach, it's effective.
Right.
You know?
And that leads us to considering the decline of the intellectual level of the mass audience. This is something I've talked about with Eric Larson quite a few times, and others who are concerned with the dumbing down of the population. It's not, you know, what's so outrageous about 9/11 to me is not just that they did it and did it in such an insanely obvious way, but that they're able to get away with it through these kinds of techniques of distorted communication that really pollute the intellectual and the communicative atmosphere of our whole culture.
Yeah, because, you know, we use the term 9/11 truth movement or 9/11 truth community for our enterprise, because we really are trying to get at the truth of the matter, but you know, we're in a realm where it's we're in the political realm, and in the political realm, truth doesn't matter so much. Winning counts. That's all that really counts. And so, whatever will help you win, that's what they do, and they will certainly pretend to be concerned about truth, but that's just part of the political strategy that helps them win.
Well, I'm trying to turn this all upside down and inside out with a campaign for Congress under the slogan, Truth in Politics, What a Concept. And, well, you know, I won a primary election with that. I don't know how much further that's going to go. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, you won it rather handily. That was remarkable. What was the percentage?
Well, it was just about 60-40, actually 59.5.
That normally is these days is called a landslide.
Yeah, and it was interesting because the Libertarian Party here was, well, there are a few naysayers. You know, they had a couple. They have a couple of closet Republicans in the Libertarian Party, and those people really didn't like me too much. So there was some organizing against me. In fact, even having this other guy run in the first place was all sort of a, well, we can't have a conspiracy theorist representing our party kind of thing. But it does seem that there are quite a few folks out there who don't think that being a conspiracy theorist is all that terrible.
Well, and obviously, you know, everybody running on the other side is also a conspiracy theorist insofar as they endorse the official conspiracy theory. So why the double standard?
Indeed, and that's what I keep pointing out. I've probably written at least 10 or 15 letters to various editors this month pointing that out. We'll be back in a moment. This is Kevin Barrett. I'm talking with David Ray Griffin, the Dean of 9/11 Studies, author of 6 books on the subject. We'll be right back.
People Radio Network. Educational. Inspirational. Constitutional. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
Welcome back. This is Truth Jihad Radio on We the People Radio Network. I'm Kevin Barrett, and today I'm talking with David Ray Griffin, the author of 6 9/11 books, including the brand new Pearl Harbor Revisited. And, well, David, even though as a theologian with a strong interest in philosophy and empirical subjects, philosophy of science, you're perfectly capable of dealing with empirical questions, and you've dealt with them superbly in your series of books. You're also a theologian, and I find you an interesting one, I have to say. As a Muslim, I'm, you know, trying fasting for Ramadan right now, trying to contemplate spiritual topics a little bit. And, you know, I was recently thinking about this whole question of the affliction. You know, Christianity, even, you know, more than Islam, really seems to focus on this, you know, this image of the supreme good being afflicted, you know, as when Christ was crucified. That's something that we don't really focus on in Islam. That, of course, picks up on the story of Job from the Old Testament, the good man who suffered afflictions from God. And I wonder, you know, whether those of us who have been working for truth, and as you have, you know, given up so much for this, you know, you put all a bunch of other books on the back burner and devoted so much of your life to this, what kind of theological reflections do you have on this, you know, this difficulty, these travails that we face trying to carry this message of truth with a seed of hope to a group of people who are not always really willing to listen?
You know, I do think that taken symbolically, the notion of the, you know, the image of the cross conveys a very powerful message that should be relevant for people of all religions, not just Christianity. Because there's this, you know, stark realism there that if you speak out for the divine good, the divine will, you are probably going to suffer affliction. And, you know, there are many, many different interpretations of the cross. And the earliest one, really, certainly one of the earliest ones, but one that one of the leading theologians of an earlier generation called the classic interpretation was the notion that that Jesus found himself battling against the forces of evil, you know, symbolically against against Satan. And it was a real battle, you know, not just a mock battle, not something that where the divine omnipotence was pulling the strings on both sides, but a real battle. And that's the interpretation I put on what's going on in the world in my book that you mentioned, Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11, that there really is a power that we can call demonic. Now, people get very nervous when they hear me use that term because they immediately think of little demons or, you know, of an actual Satan. That's why I say, taken symbolically, demythologized, but nevertheless taken seriously, because what happened in the Enlightenment in the 18th century was the leading thinkers, you know, who were both simultaneously religious, ethical, and political thinkers, saw through the mythology and rejected it, but they didn't allow for the fact that maybe the mythological symbols conveyed a deep truth. And I would say that the symbol of Satan, that the notion, you know, that there is a power for evil in the world that is a real power with autonomy and is very, very powerful, you know, powerful enough to threaten divine purposes, is something we should have kept. But that led to what, you know, we call 18th and 19th century optimism, because now it was just there's a, you know, a good God in heaven and no Satan, and everything should be swell if we could all just agree to get along. And so I've suggested what I call a non-mythological but realistic interpretation of demonic power, in which we recognize that there is a power, and in this case, you know, it's not supernatural, it's not even preternatural, to use that old term, but it's simply human power, the power that human civilization has developed through its increasing scientific and technological powers developed over the last 10 centuries, particularly. That have allowed us to develop a real threat to divine purposes, and now we're very well aware of that as we talk about, say, global warming, with its threat to perhaps bring human civilization and much of the rest of the higher forms of life on the planet to an end within our own century. So that's the frame, overall framework in which I think about this, that we really are involved in a battle between divine and demonic power. And you know, some people say, well, what keeps you going? And I say, well, you know, it is this sense that that we're aligned with the divine power of the universe, and the main thing is to be not necessarily on what people call the right side of history, because history quite often turns out terribly, but on the right side of the universe.
And I think if we're working to right this great wrong that was done on 9/11, we can feel pretty secure in that. One of the horrible things about 9/11, but also clarifying things, is that that image of, you know, these demolitions of these gigantic buildings full of people is so evil, and that evil comes across so strongly through the images. Of course, some people have even shown photos of supposed demonic faces in the smoke, but even without looking for such faces, there is a power of evil that speaks from those kinds of images. And the level of evil that would do this in such a cold, calculated way to accrue more earthly material power is so obvious, so clear. You know, it's not something that can be easily disguised. So
yeah, that's something that that everybody agrees upon, that 9/11 was a horrible evil, and that's what they've actually counted on to keep themselves in the clear. You know, the notion of the big lie. Tell a little lie, and you'll get caught. Tell a lie that is so enormous, people say they would never do such a thing. And, of course, that's what we get thrown back in our faces all these times. They say that what you're suggesting is so heinous, I simply cannot believe that. And, you know, and so I have magazine editors who refuse even to read my articles because they say, look, the bottom line is you're saying, this is an inside job, and I don't care what evidence you present, I'm not going to believe that, and I'm not going to publish your piece.
And I guess those same people think it's quite easily thinkable that brave, deranged Muslim fanatic cutting people's throats with box cutters could easily do such an evil, but nobody working for the empire would ever do such a thing. Oh, well, double
exactly.
Standards persist. We'll be back in a moment. Kevin Barrett here with Dr. David Ray Griffin. Feel free to phone in. The number is 512-646.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett, talking with Dr. David Ray Griffin. I found out that 9/11 was an inside job, and pretty much thanks to Dr. Griffin and his terrific first book, The New Pearl Harbor. He's got a new one out called New Pearl Harbor Revisited, as well as four in between those two. And David, you wanted to bring up an article that you recently published as well.
Yes, I just published it. It's going around on the Internet quite a bit now. It's called Was America Attacked by Muslims on 9/11? And, you know, when you think about it, that's finally the bottom line. That's what it's all about. And the article is based on the new book, On the New Pearl Harbor Revisited. And, of course, there's a lot more in the book. All this evidence comes mainly from a couple of the chapters. But that's finally what it comes down to. And then let me say just a word about the new book, that some people have assumed that from the title it's simply a revised version of the New Pearl Harbor. Not at all. It's completely new, every word new. And the idea is you read both books together. So this book presupposes the New Pearl Harbor. And the problem with the New Pearl Harbor is it's terribly out of date. It was written at the end of 2003, updated a little in 2004, and an enormous amount has happened since that time.
Well, you know,
so I suggested that people simply read Chapter 1 of the New Pearl Harbor and then read Chapter 1 of the New Pearl Harbor Revisited and go through the two books like that.
You know, I think that the New Pearl Harbor has held up amazingly well in terms of its overall evaluation of the evidence. You can, I think, go back and read it today, and there's very little in it that needs to be altered. And that's
yeah, I found a few things that are outright errors, and so I correct, you know, I mentioned those and explained in the new book what I should have said. But then the main thing is that almost everything's out of date, because since that was published, you've had the 9/11 Commission report come out, then you had the NIST report come out in 2005, then you had all these attempts to defend the official story that came out in 2006, and then further interaction with the 9/11 Truth community and the NIST people in recent years. And then this enormous addition of intellectuals and professionals who have joined the 9/11 Truth movement. So the new book is actually longer than the old one. And by the way, I just got it yesterday, and it's just absolutely gorgeous. I'm very pleased with it. Both the cover is gorgeous, and then inside the print is quite big. So it is a very, very easy book to read as well.
Well, great. I can't wait to get a hold of one. And we have some callers who are presumably interested in getting their copies as well. Let's bring them on. Our first caller is Dave from California, who's been waiting patiently for quite some time. Hello, Dave. Hello, Dave.
Maybe he wasn't so patient.
Yeah, he finally lost patience, you know. We 9/11 truthers have to be quite patient to persist in this endeavor, but, you know, there are limits. Okay, let's move on to Solomon from California then. Hello, Solomon. I mean, not California. He's from Canada. I always do this. I know Solomon. Solomon from Canada. Hello, Solomon. Hello. Did he lose patience too?
You must have
you have a technical problem.
Okay, it looks like we have a technical problem.
Yes, sir.
Okay, do we have any callers on now? Dave, okay. Dave, welcome, Dave.
Hi there.
How are you?
Assalamu alaikum, Kevin.
Well, alaikum assalam. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. I've forgotten the traditional Ramadan greeting. Sorry about that.
Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Mubarak to you.
All right.
I have a brief anecdote and a question for Dr. Griffin, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Dr. Griffin, I want to thank you. You're the fellow that finally forced me against my will to, after having pursued 9/11 from the day it happened with the information that we had available, the fact that I saw World Trade Center 7 collapse that day and knew that was wrong as a fireman, and also the anomalies around the Pentagon, but I just forced myself to not consider the towers to be part of this thing. I knew there was something wrong, but the towers were all the firemen died, and that's always been my biggest thing. And it was your paper that was the 11 similarities between controlled demolitions and the tower collapses that forced me. I read it like 10 times, and then finally said, you know, he's right. I can't argue against this, and force me to face the grim fact that the towers, you know, were murders perpetrated on people on purpose, not just fires that suddenly fell apart and caused everybody to die. So I thank you for that. Also,
well, and that's right. That's what Kevin and I were just talking about. That is really unbelievable evil, and yet when you look at the empirical evidence, you must conclude that that's what happened.
That's right, and I tried so hard not to do that. I mean, half of me was just going, you idiot, you know that something's wrong here, and the other half was just saying, no, until I know for sure, I just can't deal with it. So anyway, you did.
Hey, since you mentioned that essay, Dave, let me say that it has now been republished and with an update in a new issue of Paul Zaremka's book, which is called The Hidden History of 9/11, which is an excellent volume, but it used to be $80 or $90, and now it has come out in paperback at a reasonable price, and most of the essays in there have been updated, so I wanted to alert the audience to that book.
Excellent. Thank you for that. And I had a question for you. The book before your most previous one, the one that you just wrote, the one about contradictions? Can't remember
yes.
the exact name.
9/11 contradictions.
Okay, correct. I was fascinated by that book, and I thought it was really great because a lot of people who really don't get into physics and don't really want to hear about how fast planes can turn and all this can still be interested in the conflicts of testimony by people that were involved. And I was particularly blown away by the one on Cheney, where he kept trying to say that he wasn't, you know, basically say that he wasn't there when the Pentagon was hit, even after saying, the first time I heard Cheney say anything, in fact, on it was the day that it happened, and he said two big guys grabbed me and dragged me down the hallway with my toes dragging right after the second plane hit. But
that's right, and he told that story on Tim Russert 5 days after 9/11, and what he said then, when his memory was fresh, contradicts what the 9/11 Commission said, saying that Cheney didn't get down there till almost 10 o'clock. In other words, about a 45-minute lie.
Right. Well, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind maybe loosely quoting one or two of your favorite parts of that chapter for folks, and so that can plant itself deeper in my mind, too.
Well, I probably better not take time to do that, but let me just thank you for that and say that is such a central part of the evidence. And as you say, for people who don't want to get into technical aspects about planes and fires and buildings, that book is for them, because it's just 25 internal contradictions where people who are supporting the official story violently contradict each other. So in this case, Norman Mineta, who's a member, who was Secretary of Transportation, said that Cheney was already down there by 9:20. And many other people said the same thing, including Richard Clark, the counterterrorism czar, and David Borer, the Cheney's own photographer. And so are we supposed to believe the 9/11 Commission against all of those people and against Cheney himself? And then likewise, the 9/11 Commission reports that General Myers was up on Capitol Hill that morning, and yet Richard Clark reports that he was having a video conference running from the White House, and that Myers was in the Pentagon, where he was supposed to be, participating in the video conference. So we have that's two, and so we have 25 of those just flat-out contradictions.
Yep. And it was a real interesting read. Thank you again, sir.
Thank you for the call.
Peace. So long.
Okay, thanks, Dave. Take care. We'll be back. We do have a lineup of more callers. This is Kevin Barrett on Truth Jihad Radio. I'm talking with David Ray Griffin, and we will return in just a moment.
News, politics, cover-ups, government corruption. You're listening to We the People Radio Network.
WTPRN.
Welcome back to Truth Jihad Radio. I'm Kevin Barrett. You're listening to We the People Radio Network. My current guest is Dr. David Ray Griffin, the Dean of 9/11 Studies, the author of six books, ranging from The New Pearl Harbor, published in early 2004, to The New Pearl Harbor Revisited, a completely different, brand new book, looking back, looking back with more information and more expertise at the case for 9/11 having been an inside job. We do have more callers lined up. Solomon from Canada is next. Hello, Solomon. Hello, Solomon.
Okay.
Solomon, you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hello.
Welcome.
You can?
Oh.
Yeah, excellent.
How are you?
Thanks. I'm okay. Thanks for taking my call. I'm looking forward to the new book by Dr. Griffin. I got a couple of quick questions. First question, would Dr. Griffin agree that given the complicity of the entire Western media, not just the United States, but Canada, Europe, Australia as well, and not only putting forward the fabricated story of 9/11, but in covering up the truth of 9/11 implies that there's a broader conspiracy that goes much deeper than just the Bush administration? That's the first question. Second question, putting the context of what he said about demonic power in the conversation that you were having with the previous guest, Mr. Levy, I'm sure Dr. Griffin is familiar with the idea of the good and the fact that the evil is really just partial perception, the fact that we can't see the whole picture, the ultimate consequences of our actions, that we're tied to our bodies and our limited perspective as embodied beings. And so based on that limited perception, we see evil. If we could see the whole picture, we would see good. Now, I know he's somewhat concerned to have a philosophy that allows us to engage for the good. But I'm just wondering what his response would be to those that say that evil is just based on limited perception and that the whole is the good.
Well, I'd say they're wrong. And I've actually written some two major books about that. The first one that is the best known, and probably the book that I was the best known for before I got into this area, is called God, Power, and Evil, A Process Theodicy. And then I wrote a follow-up book that was based on critiques that that book had received, that's called Evil Revisited. And then I was a participant in a book that was put out with all professors from the group of colleges where I taught in Claremont, called Encountering Evil. And that's really the revised edition of that book is really my latest and I think best treatment of that, a brief treatment of that. And that, you know, that view that evil is simply a partial perspective and therefore a false perspective on the whole, and that if you saw the whole thing from the divine perspective, you would see that everything is absolutely perfect. That presupposes the doctrine of divine omnipotence, because you see, if you hold that God is perfectly good, which I do, but also hold that God is all-powerful so that what appears to be our own power is really an illusion, then you have to hold that evil itself is an illusion. And, you know, maybe God's way of spurring us on and all that. But I reject. I mean, that's what process theology is all about with regard to the question of God, is rejecting this traditional notion of divine omnipotence that, you know, Augustine and Calvin and Luther and even Thomas Aquinas held. And which is based on the notion of creation ex nihilo, the absolute beginning of finite matter of fact, so that there's no inherent power in the created realm. So that's a long way of saying what I said at the beginning. I just think they're wrong.
Okay.
And then I disagree with that. But the next question.
The other question, certainly, about the participation of the news media, and that connects to what I was talking about, demonic power, because in that book, Christian Faith and the Truth Behind 9/11, one of my strongest recommendations at the end of the book is that the forces of good need to create our own newspapers and our own broadcasting systems. Because the corporate media, what the problem is, all our information, most of our information now in the public realm comes from corporately owned entities, and they're getting rich off of all of these shenanigans, the so-called war on terror, which is simply a war to steal the oil from, I mean, it's not simply this, but a large part of it is the oil, to steal oil from Muslim countries. So they're getting, I mean, we're in the realm of trillions of dollars here. So we're not talking about pocket change. And people often do terrible things for pocket change. So you can imagine what they're willing to do for this kind of money. And so that is a large part of what I call the demonic network or realm that we now live in. And no, I do not believe that is just part of the greater good.
Okay, thank you. I'll let you get into the next caller. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Next caller is Mike from Kentucky. Hello, Mike. I know we're a little slow today on the phones. Hello, Mike. Are you there yet? Mike from Kentucky. One more time. Mike from Kentucky. Come in. Well, we seem to be having a problem getting a hold of Mike. But, no, David, as you know, somebody interested in mysticism. Okay, I guess I'll save that for another conversation. Okay, Mike is on. Hello, Mike.
I am.
You sure are.
Ramadan Mubarak.
Ramadan Mubarak to you. Thank you.
Congratulations on your primary win. That's great. They actually counted the votes. What a concept.
Well, yeah, here in Wisconsin, apparently Diebold hasn't rigged the entire election system. And we know that not just because I won this last Libertarian primary, but also because in the latest presidential elections, the exit polls match with the vote count, unlike in certain other states.
Ah, that's always a good thing. Well, I just really wanted to call and say thanks. I'm such a big fan of Dr. David Ray Griffin, and keep up the great work. Maybe send a shout-out to all the truthers dealing with what we got to deal with. Remember the Beatitudes, but blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake.
That is very apt to our situation.
It is. It is. Do you have any advice for us, Dr. Griffin? I'm really encouraged by all of the international awareness. I'm hoping that, you know, the international community can kind of save us from ourselves.
Well, that's true. We do have all these positive developments occurring in Japan, in Italy, and now, thanks to Italy's Chiesa, Representative Chiesa to the European Parliament, he was yesterday showing his movie Zero, which is certainly one of the best 9/11 movies ever made. I would put it up there in the same category with Loose Change, Final Cut. Is showing it to the Russian people. So millions of Russians saw a true presentation of 9/11 yesterday. So who knows what will come from that. Another hopeful thing that occurred on 9/11 itself that I hope will get a lot of attention is this letter put out by Denis Kucinich saying that, we've been great problems have been caused not only by 9/11, but the interpretation that has been put on 9/11, and that he's calling for a truth and reconciliation forum or commission, so that the main thing now is not retributive justice, he says. The main thing is getting the truth out, and I've long advocated, along with some other people, that probably the only way we would do this is something similar to what occurred in South Africa, where the concern is not to punish the wicked, but simply to get the truth out so that the policies can be changed.
Yeah,
let me make one, Kevin, if I can put in one plug here before our time's up. All my books are available on 911truth.org. Just go to the bookstore, and they're available at 25% off.
Okay, 911truth.org. I'm happy to plug that site, too. That's my favorite 911 Truth site. 911truth.org. Well, it looks like we are facing the music now. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
And take care.
You too.
And thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye. And thank you, David, for yet another wonderful interview. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and thank you for your terrific work over the years on this all-important issue, and may God bless you.
Okay, Kevin, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. It's David Ray Griffin, the Dean of 9/11 Studies. Check out his books at 911truth.org, and I'm Kevin Barrett signing out till tomorrow. See you then.